Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
David Hirschland, Executive VP of Music Publishing Catalogs at BMG.
And we are, of course, talking the Hologram Show with Roy Orbison and Buddy Holly, which is coming to the Strathmore in North Bethesda on Wednesday, November 13th. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Happy to do it, Jason.
Okay, cool. So when I saw this listed, obviously I'm an old soul and I love Roy Orbison and Buddy Holly, but the thing that really caught my eye is that they're going to be on stage performing in Hologram. I would love to go into their music catalog, you know, in a minute, but let's talk about the Hologram stuff first. We've seen this done with, I think, like Tupac and Michael Jackson, some newer artists. But how did the idea come about to do it with, you know, some of these two legends?
Well, we were approached by Bass Entertainment. Bass is a well-established touring entity that has been producing shows for many, many years. They actually have gotten into the Hologram space for years. They were one of the really, although they didn't develop the Tupac Hologram, once they saw the reaction to it, they thought this was something that made a lot of sense. So they approached the Roy Orbison estate, and the estate was, you know, very, very happy to have Roy presented in this format. That show toured a couple of years ago in Europe to great acclaim, and they did a limited number of shows in the United States. They felt like they needed to bolster the show with a second artist, and they couldn't think of a better artist than Buddy Holly. So we at BMG obtained the rights to Buddy Holly's catalog and his name, image, likeness rights from Maria Elena Holly back in 2015. Maria Elena had heard about Holograms as well and was very anxious to see Buddy portrayed in this way. Of course, Buddy was tragically lost to us at the age of 22 years old in 1959. So obviously very few people alive today got to see Buddy Holly perform. So it seemed like the perfect way to present Buddy to a new generation, well, actually several generations of fans that have loved his music all these years.
That's awesome. And I know you're with the music catalog side, but do you have any insight on how the actual Hologram is put together? Do they go back? Do they contact the estate and get, you know, certain clips? Or do you know how technologically that works?
Absolutely. We were involved in every step of the process. So the way it works is they choose an actor. It's much like you've seen actors in films. For example, Carrie Fisher in the Star Wars films after she passed away, where you basically, Andy Serkis is also the perfect example, who you shoot the actor who is very much imitating the moves and look of Buddy Holly. You spend a lot of time in makeup. You shoot with a special camera and then afterwards do CGI work to further enhance the image to make it appear as if it's really Buddy Holly. It's a live band with backup singers, so the actor who is playing Buddy or Roy interacts with the band while we're shooting. So in other words, with an imaginary band, and it's very much a realistic effect.
So when our listeners come out to the Strathmore, they're going to see a live band on stage and backup singers on stage, but the only, let's say, digital image will be of Roy and Buddy themselves.
Exactly. And, wow. You know, the effect is quite striking. There's a lot of oohs and ahs when Buddy and Roy appear on stage. And it's a fun show. It's just really fun. You're seeing as close to a Roy Orbison and Buddy Holly show as you possibly could get.
Absolutely. So it's sort of that your Andy Serkis thing with like the dots on him and all that stuff, and he's moving around, and then after the fact they kind of, you know, paste the image of Buddy Holly on top of it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Okay. I mean, basically, that's right. Basically, that's the effect. You're digitally enhancing. In this case, it's more, you know, it's the actor himself is really, you know, he's not, you're not turning him into a cartoon character. You're really making him Buddy in the first place and then just working on the image so that it's even more realistic.
Wow. And that's crazy because not only are they have to move like him, but they have to do, you know, their mouth is going to move with this, not only move with the song, but in Buddy Holly's case, you know, you have the big,
yeah.
Like he's got to do the
yeah.
little, he's got to do those little inflections. What would you even call that, by the way? What do you call that little?
But Buddy's way of singing was unique. It really was. And people still, you know, the thing about Buddy Holly is he invented so much of what rock and roll became. You know, Elvis Presley, of course, gets a lot of credit, deservedly so. But Buddy was the first guy that wrote his own songs, produced his own songs, put the four-instrument format together, which, of course, the Beatles adopted. Of course, the Beatles are named after the Crickets, Buddy's group, and even his way of singing influenced an entire generation of rock and roll stars. So we're just thrilled that people are going to get a chance to appreciate the genius of Buddy Holly.
Absolutely, and to sort of we segued into the music there, which I know is your bread and butter. So if you'll permit me to do a deeper dive into some of the songs, it's some of the greatest songs of all time. I'll put a couple out at you and just tell me what makes each one unique or if you have a good trivia fact on that song,
okay.
Have at it.
Yeah.
Tell me about That'll Be the Day. I know it was a big movie. I know that was a line that John Wayne used in The Searchers.
Yeah.
What about that song stands out to you that Buddy Holly recorded?
What about what?
Just the song That'll Be the Day. Do you have any good tidbits on him recording that?
Well, I mean, there's a whole, you know, we could get into, you know, a whole discussion of the history of how he recorded. He recorded most of his hits with Norman Petty in Clovis, New Mexico at Norman's studio. It was really quite a partnership, an interesting partnership. That'll Be the Day was really, you know, a hit from the beginning. The thing about this show is people are going to be kind of astounded and realize that every song is a hit. I mean, Buddy wrote 46 songs in an 18-month period. It's pretty and nearly all of them were hits. I mean, you can start with That'll Be the Day, but you've got Peggy Sue, you've got, you know, Rave On, you've got so many songs that became standards that have been covered over and over and over again. We just licensed Every Day, which is really, I think, well, pretty much the top song in the catalog, but we just licensed it to Citibank for a new campaign, Fiona Apple's version. So, you know, you've got the Linda Ronstadt, obviously cover is very famous. Obviously, the Grateful Dead closed their show for years and years and years with, you know, with Buddy Holly songs. The first song the Beatles ever played for George Martin in their audition for him was Crying, Waiting, Hoping, Buddy Holly song.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you could get into each song and how it was crafted, but it was really just, I mean, the genius of Buddy in every song, and they're all different. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, you're kind of referencing how many other people covered it, and you said they're going to use it in different, you know, ad campaigns and stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that even let's say young kids, like, they could come to this show and they would be like, oh, I'm like, every day it's getting like, you've heard that on a commercial a million times, or I think even Weezer named this song called Buddy Holly. You know what I mean? Like his influence just echoes on and on. And how much do you think, I mean, obviously the music was great, but do you think his, you know, untimely demise also really, you know, it just kind of, like a James Dean effect, it kind of cemented the leg and made folks miss him even more. I mean, you had Don McLean do The Day the Music Died, you know, American Pie. Because who all was on that flight? It was Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, Big Bopper.
Yeah, those were the three stars. There was a fourth person. I've forgotten who that is. But,
the pilot. Robert Peterson.
Yeah, sorry, the pilot.
Yes.
Look, I mean, yeah, you're right about the James Dean effect. We will always think of Buddy as forever young and you know, a hero and just a tragic, tragic loss. I mean, you think about what he did in such a short period of time and then what he could have accomplished. He was set to record with Ray Charles. He was set to do something with Mahalia Jackson. He had a lot of plans that went beyond, you know, the just the rock and roll format, and he could have done so many different things.
And to your point, that's what makes the hologram show so spectacular is, like, to your point, what you said earlier, there's hardly anyone living today that remembers actually, you know, that has actually been able to see him live because he was taken at such a young age. So that's what makes this so special.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And not to give Roy Orbison short shrift, by the way. I mean, obviously many, many more people got to see Roy, and Roy, there was, you know, a big television special that he did. Of course, he was a member of, you know, the super group with George Harrison and Bob Dylan and Tom Petty. So Roy had obviously a full career, but the show is so interesting because these guys are both from West Texas. They knew each other, and they never performed together. Now they're getting to share the stage together. It's pretty interesting.
Absolutely. Remind our listeners, let's pivot to Roy Orbison a little bit. We, you know, we want a lot of the Buddy Holly songs, but man, Roy Orbison, God, that voice, yeah. Talk about what made his voice so unique.
Well, who knows? That instrument is incredible. I mean, come on, you just think of Pretty Women, you think of the falsetto that Roy had. It's unique among rock, and, you know, he was one of the greatest vocalists in rock and roll history. Simple as that. You know, that high falsetto, you know, you're going to get an interesting mix in this show of, you know, Roy's kind of mournful in many, 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 many ways, sad songs and Buddy's just sort of celebratory jubilant songs. It's quite an interesting mix.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Pretty Woman, but that falsetto is also in Crying, Man. He really gets that falsetto in that song.
Yeah.
God, there was In Dreams, which I remember was David Lynch used in Velvet.
Yeah.
I can't think of it without thinking of that movie now. Only the Lonely, Anything You Want It, You Got It. I mean, come on. So many. Well, that's great. So how did, if you'll forgive me for talking logistics for one more second, you mentioned Buddy Holly's estate. How was Roy? You said Roy Orbison's was they crafted that hologram first and toured with that, and then they added Buddy Holly.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. And they have, the technology has really improved greatly. The first iteration of the Roy Orbison show was it was great. We that's one of the reasons we wanted to work with Bass, is they did such a great job. But they in just over a year have enhanced Roy's image to the point where it's like night and day, and people will just you know, like I said, there's lots of gasps and oohs and ahs when they hit the stage.
So just so I have the spelling correct, when you say Bass, is it BASE or BASS?
BASE.
BASE is, that's the company that
the producer
company that, okay.
Yeah.
They're the ones doing the hologram. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Awesome. And then how does it work? And again, another logistical question, but this is we're talking about, you know, posthumous stars here. How does it work in terms of, you know, when a live artist, you know, when Bruce Springsteen tours or whatever, you know, he's making the money off the tour. How does it actually, like, who does it actually benefit? Does it go to the estate? Does it go to Bass?
Answer that, well, obviously,
for me.
Yeah, it's obvious. It's like any other division of revenue in live music. Yeah, the Bass needs to be reimbursed for their expenses, and the artist's estates have the benefit of being paid part of the net proceeds, as well as for the songs. I mean, they have to pay separately for the songs to be used. So, yeah, so that's how it works.
Gotcha. Yeah, I guess they're paying for the catalog and then also for the image and likeness of the person. And then, yeah, however that gets percentage out. Okay, cool. I was just curious. You know, it's a whole new that's like a whole new frontier of concert touring, you know?
And the one, if you want to get a little bit more technical, the master owner also gets paid, so the record labels get paid because they're using the original masters. They're using the voice that was originally recorded. They're not using the backup music because that's the live band, but in terms of Roy's voice and Buddy's voice, those are actual recorded voices of Buddy and Roy, and those are owned by the record companies.
So that is all the different slices of that's the incentive for all of this, you know, at least we're talking the financial side, but on the altruistic side, it's spreading this music to a new generation. Speak to how, you know, if our listeners of all ages, maybe parents or grandparents, how you invite them to bring out their own kids and help them to rediscover really timeless tunes.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen all ages at these shows. We've seen, you know, the kids are not only interested in exploring the artist, but they're interested, they seem to be more interested in the technology. Obviously, everybody's interested in the technology, but, you know, the kids, I think, are particularly, interested in this new form. The adults may just be thinking they're going to an oldies rock and roll show, which they are. But the kids are like, oh, they're reacting to everything. And it's really fascinating to see that. It's great.
That's really, really cool. All right. Well, how's the show structured? Who gets to open for who here?
Well, it's really a co-headlining situation. Yeah. Actually, Roy comes on first. And then Buddy, but they trade off. There's an intermission. There's also films, short films that introduce to people the careers, the highlights of the careers that are very well put together, very interesting films that people will see that introduce the show. So, you know, you get a full show of two great artists, what they've done, and how they were on stage.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait for everyone to see this. Is the idea do you anticipate this spreading, you know, even more? I mean, we've mentioned it, you know, with people who died recently, like Tupac and Michael Jackson. I think of the first two I remember at least reading about. But now that they have Roy and Buddy, who, you know, have been, you know, had left us a while ago, at least Buddy's case. I think Orbison died in like 88. But do you think this will happen more with, you know,
I have
Elvis
no doubt.
And...
I have no doubt. Well, yeah. It's hard to, you know, it depends on what the estates want to do on these various artists. But look, they're already, Bass is already in production with a Whitney Houston show that'll be much different. They've done Maria Callas, so they've done the classical opera world. There is currently a Frank Zappa hologram that's been produced. There's a Ronnie James Dio. Absolutely no question that this will be a more common form of entertainment, especially as we keep losing great artists.
Wow, yeah, that'll be a really cool way to keep them alive. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Thanks. You've been generous with your time. And again, everybody, it's Roy Orbison and Buddy Holly singing in hologram with a live band on Wednesday, November 13th at the Music Center at Strathmore. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Have a good time. Don't forget, it's all fun and rock and roll.